You're listening to Veterinary Vertex, a podcast of the AVMA journals. In this episode, we chat about reverse zoonoses with our guest, Fred Kibenghe.
Welcome to Veterinary Vertex. I'm Editor-in-Chief Lisa Fortier, and we're joined by Associate Editor Sarah Wright and Fred Kibenghe. In addition to be JAVMA and AJVR author, Fred is also a fabulous member of our Associate Editor Board. Fred, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. You know, thank you, Lisa, for inviting me, and I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, let's jump right in. So, Fred, your manuscripts in both JAVMA and AJVR discuss reverse zoonoses. Can you give our listeners background on what reverse zoonoses is?
Yes, certainly. So, the term reverse zoonosis actually goes hand in hand with the zoonosis. It's like reverse zoonosis, the converse or the opposite of zoonosis. And probably zoonosis is the better understood term, which is essentially, you know, commonly used to refer to infections that are transmitted from animals to humans, you know, with several examples like rabies or West Nile from wild birds to humans and so on. But reverse zoonosis then actually refers to the transmission of infections or diseases from humans to animals. And that's actually probably a less understood concept, because usually you assume that, you know, the virus comes from animals to humans, but the reverse is the opposite. And so for example, if you look at the avian influenza that has been circulating in poultry right now, you know, the humans get exposed to the virus when they contact, you know, infected chickens, which is zoonosis. But then if humans contact other animals that are susceptible, like cats and dogs and so on, then that would be termed reverse zoonosis.
This is definitely a hot topic right now, so I'm really glad that we're doing this podcast episode with you. So for veterinarians, how can they work to both prevent and control reverse zoonoses?
You know, as I mentioned, you know, zoonosis and reverse zoonosis go hand in hand. And our current understanding right now is that the best way to deal with the zoonosis and reverse zoonosis is actually through the one health approach, whereby we look at the human health, animal health, and the plant health and the environmental health as being, you know, a collaborative aspect where people work together to solve these significant issues. And when you consider the one health approach, then actually the veterinarian is right at the center of that one health approach, because they are actually usually the people on the front lines who will, first of all, diagnose when a virus has actually spilled over, let's say from humans to animals, which is reverse zoonosis, or even if the virus is actually coming from animals to humans, for example, in rabies and that type of thing. So the veterinarians are right at the center of this one health approach. So the other thing is that not only are they at the front lines of this aspect, but they are also actually at risk of being exposed to the viruses, you know, either from the animals, but also being able to transmit the virus from themselves to the animals that they may be working with. So actually, what I'm mentioning is that the veterinarians are actually at the center of this whole reverse zoonosis. And then when you go beyond that in terms of how can they help prevent the disease or the infection, again, they are right there, because they are the ones interacting with the animal owners. They can pass the information on through client education. They can also look after the animals in terms of vaccinating them against the infectious agents that can be transmitted from humans to animals or vice versa, and so on. So in my mind, you know, the veterinarian is right at the center of this whole aspect.
You do a really great job of explaining that, Fred. And one of the things I often forget about until you read about it is, as you said, that the veterinarians are putting themselves at risk. I mean, I know it's their job, but I mean, some of these really crazy viruses are quite life-threatening. So it's quite brave of people to be in this area.
Yes, completely. And that's true, particularly for some of these, very highly pathogenic viruses that can easily be contracted without someone really thinking about it. You know, it was interesting. I think they were the very first cases where they were trying to control avian influenza in the Netherlands. I think it was with the H7N2, where a veterinarian went into a poultry house to depopulate the poultry house because of this outbreak of avian influenza. And because this veterinarian did not take the recommended antiviral drug, Relenza or Tamiflu, the person was exposed, and actually it was the first death of H7N2 in terms of that reverse zoonosis, so to speak. Zoonosis and reverse zoonosis, yes.
Yeah, it definitely has strong implications. Fred, what sparked your interest in reverse zoonosis?
Yeah, that's actually an interesting question because, I mean, as a researcher, I work with animal viruses, and I'm always actually reading and looking out for any incidents of where animal viruses are causing a lot of impact. And probably the most important have been the zoonotic infections. So I really follow up on all those, wherever they are reported. But over time, I've also recognized that whereas the interest is in zoonotic infections, there has been actually little sort of focus on viruses that are actually transmitted from humans to animals, the reverse zoonosis. And yet, both of those go hand in hand. To get reverse zoonosis, you must have a virus infecting humans. And usually the virus that infect humans are these zoonotic viruses, most of them, so to speak. So that has actually been my interest. And in my profession, because I teach virology to veterinary students, in the process of trying to keep updated, I also keep on, taking notes of those new reports, And particularly nowadays when we've had these pandemics, and most of them have always been associated with the reverse zoonotics, whether it has been H1N1, the 2009 influenza, or the COVID-19, all of them, there has always been aspects of the virus moving from humans to animals.
Yeah, it's really hard to avoid any of these pandemic, epidemic, zoonosis, viral organisms. I remember, Fred, exactly where I was, standing when I was trying to convince you to be an associate editor in JAVMA, and I'll thank you again for everything you do for us and AJVR. And I also remember once we had the board formed and we really wanted to start this Currents in One Health series. And I asked the associate editor board, would anybody have ideas or would they like to write a manuscript? And you were the first one to raise your hand and say, I will write about reverse zoonosis. So thank you for that. But also I can feel your passion, but what other things inspired you to volunteer? These aren't easy manuscripts to write. and you stepped up straight up to the plate.
Yeah, I should say that actually when I received your invitation to join the inaugural, Associated Editor Board, that I was, first of all, pleasantly surprised, but even extremely honored, because to me, the AVMA, any veterinarian, this is the highest group that you can get to. And the AVMA is actually probably, I think, the largest organizations of veterinarians worldwide. So to be asked to join, the associate editor for those journals was quite, an honor and a privilege. And because I had been thinking a fair bit about, these reverse zoonosis as we've been discussing, when you mentioned the currents in One Health, it just occurred to me that we had to have at least some review article to bring together all this information, at least for the benefit of the veterinarians. And I remember, when we were discussing, you also were asking if we knew of others, experts, that could probably contribute to the currents in One Health. And to me, for the reverse zoonosis, I felt that I was in the best place to to do this, because I'd been reading up and, you know, there were so many of these outbreaks coming up. You know, at that time, I know we didn't have the H5N1 as we have it now, but it was timely, and I feel privileged to have been given the opportunity to write those two manuscripts.
Well, they were fascinating. I learned a lot, and you clearly are a world-leading expert, so thank you again for those.
Yeah, thank you.
For the listeners that may or may not know, in Jabman AJVR, as Fred said, we had an inaugural associate editor board, so many of the associate editors, like Fred, are volunteers. We have a couple that are full-time AVMA employees, but Fred and others graciously take on this role as associate editor out of passion or whatever it is. That's what I'm going to ask Fred. Like, what's your experience been like? And you've added this on top of everything you're already busy doing. Why did you do it, and how's your experience been?
Again, as I mentioned, you know, it's really an honor to be serving the AVMA in this capacity. And you know, every time you get assigned a manuscript, I feel, you know, very passionate and interested in shepherding it through the review process. And in doing that, you know, corresponding with the reviewers and reading the articles, you know, their comments and also the manuscript from the author, it's a very good learning experience. It's like I keep updated on all these areas of interest, you know, because these manuscripts are actually at the cutting edge of whoever is writing them, you know. So you read, you get updated, but you then also get to know how the scientific community is also looking at that literature, and then you make a decision, which is actually quite I think it's a privilege for me. But also in serving on the associate editor board, I know we have these quarterly meetings, and it's always very informative, I should say educational, at least for my part, to hear, you know, all the other members and you, particularly Lisa, when you are all talking about these other things going on in veterinary medicine. You know, I'm so focused in my area in virology, microbiology, but I still have that passion of the wider veterinary medicine. So being on the board and listening to these discussions is actually another really benefit in my case. So I feel privileged that I'm still current in a discipline that I really
Yeah, love. I really like your word, Fred, privileged. And I too feel very privileged that authors trust us with their work. And, you know, as you know, we're really, our culture is to be author friendly, reviewer friendly, because it is, they're putting their heart and soul into this work and then sharing it with us. And I think and you are too, like just bringing a wonderful feeling to our journals and the culture that we are really trying to keep.
Yes,
and wonderful to have you, Fred. Thank you so much for being a part of our board and contributing to the journals too. And as you mentioned, you have an interest in virology and microbiology, and you're actually a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Microbiology.
Yes.
How did your advanced training prepare you to write this manuscript?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. So the American College of Veterinary Microbiology, it actually has, I think, four subspecialties. You know, there is bacteriology and mycology, there is immunology, there is parasitology, and then there is virology. You know, so actually I was boarded in 1988, you know, looks like ages ago, but I was boarded in immunology. But to me, you know, microbiology, I'm everything on microbiology. I'll read anything as long as it's in that area. And teaching animal virology for the past 30 years, over 30 years I've been teaching, you know, veterinary students this subject of animal virology. So that I feel was probably the main preparation, because I'm always trying to be current to make sure that the students get the most current information. And in that sense, I'm always actually collecting data and information that allows me to probably put together some of these manuscripts as we are published in the journals.
That's great. And that's actually why we love doing this podcast too, is bringing people new and current information that can help advance their practice. So it's been really fun to do.
Yeah.
So no pressure for this next question, but it's very important for our listeners. And this kind of brings it all together. If a veterinarian is about to meet a client, what is one piece of information they should know about reverse zoonoses?
Yeah, that's a tough question, because in my view, you know, in terms of what the veterinarian should know, it's like everything in those manuscripts should be actually at the fingertips of veterinarians. But when a veterinarian is meeting a client, you know, I think one of the most important information that should be communicated is probably something that the clients don't even think about. The fact that actually they can be exposed, or they can actually expose animals to their infections. In other words, the human infections can be passed on to the animals. So they may be so familiar with the zoonosis where the animal infects the human, but in this case, we're talking about the human being able to transmit the virus to the animal. So the veterinarian, I think, would be in the best position to pass that information on during either, you know, the information or client education to make sure that the animal owners know the risk of their pets to the infections they can carry. And that risk is actually even more dangerous when you consider the fact that if the virus was to move from the human to the animal, like what happened with the SARS-CoV-2 in the Netherlands, where the virus moved from the farm workers to the farmed mink. In the animal, the virus can then mutate again and may then come back to the human as a more virulent pathogenic virus. So it's important that the veterinarian communicates that information to make sure that the risk of exposure to the animals is more or less removed to avoid the spillover and potential buildup of a reservoir in the animal population. This is something that can be avoided, you know, and the veterinarian is probably the best person because he has this opportunity when he's talking to the animal owners, you know, either when they are bringing their animals or even just trying to impart, you know, pass on client education for the people to know, you know, either when they are looking at a sick animal or they are doing vaccination clinics or any of that of those aspects, activities. Actually, it's a very opportune time for the veterinarian to educate or to inform the client, the animal owner.
Yeah, thank you, Fred. I got to read both of your manuscripts, and I learned even more today. So just the way you distilled it down in different words really brought several things home. So thank you again.
Thank you.
As we start to wind down a little bit, we ask a little bit more of a personal sort of bend to the questions. And one that Lee, Sarah, and I love to hear the answer to, and the listeners really like it too. What is the oldest or the most interesting item either in your desk drawer or on top of your desk?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, I've been here at the University of Prince Edward Island, you know, in the vet college here for over 30 years. And during that time, I have had several offices, you know, as a faculty member and then department chair and then coming back as... So, you know, I've always moved. And as you move the things in your desk drawer or on your desk, you know, they also keep moving. But the one thing that I think I know that has probably survived all those movements are these, they're actually photographs of my three children. You know, these were taken when they were just starting primary school, you know, when we had just moved here. So they're actually, those pictures, they are always present in all those movements. But what's interesting is that they are actually now not as they appear, you know, because these kids have grown up, they're in their late 30s, early 40s, you know, so they may look slightly different, but to me, they are the ones that are always there. So that's something that I thought about when I was thinking about this interview.
Yeah, I think I have the same, Fred, in multiple offices as well. And I think it's fascinating when you look back at pictures like that, their personality was set a very long, not just their morphology of their face, but their personality was set a long, long time ago as well.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, we also hear, Fred, and I'm sure you do in your teaching, and especially as department chair, about wellness and grit and resilience and all those things. Where does your inspiration or your resilience come from?
Okay. So actually, there's not one thing that I can point to. There are so many things and so many people who actually have inspired me. You know, when I look back, you know, I graduated as a veterinarian, you know, Bachelor of Veterinary Medicine in 1978 in Uganda. And 2 years later, I was actually lucky enough to get a scholarship to go to Australia to do a PhD in animal virology. You know, at that time, I really didn't choose where I was going or what I was doing. But when I arrived in Australia, I was assigned a professor of virology, you know, Dr. Graham Wilcox. You know, and all of a sudden, it was like that was my choosing. You know, I think in all the things I look back at, I think he's been the most inspirational in all the things that I've been doing. You know, he shaped my love for animal viruses. He shaped my focus, and right up to now, I mean, I think I owe everything I've achieved to him because by the time I went, I knew about viruses, but I didn't know them to the level that this person inspired me to. And right now, you know, this is my base in academia, and it's all due to him. You know, he met me. I think he just accepted a student who had a scholarship, but all of a sudden he became like my mentor and in everything. So. Yes, it's Graham Wilcox who I think has probably inspired me to get to where I am today.
It's great to have those mentors and to look back and just say thank you and then to go on and help and mentor someone else too. I think we hear that pretty commonly in this podcast, and it's one of my favorite things to hear, quite honestly.
Yeah. And actually, if I could add, you know, most of us, when we go to academia, we start, you know, this career of teaching students and so on. But normally we would not have gone through the educational training of how to teach and that type of thing. We teach like we are taught. And in my case, you know, I was a graduate student and he was teaching vet students. I would attend his lectures. And I think all the things he was doing, I've tried to sort of copy or go after what I thought were the best examples of him. So yeah, it's very inspirational.
That's excellent to hear. And just thank you so much again, Fred, for taking time out of your day to chat with us about your manuscript. And thank you for being associate editor and an author too for JAVLon AJVR.
Yeah, thank you. This has been an honor for me to be at this point with the AVMA editors.
Well, we love having you. And to our listeners, you can read Fred's manuscript on our journal's website and in print JAVMA. I'm Dr. Sarah Wright with Dr. Lisa Fortier. We want to thank each of you for joining us on this episode of the Veterinary Vertex podcast. We love sharing cutting-edge veterinary research with you, and we want to hear from you. Be sure to leave us a rating review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you listen to.